Aloha, ladies and gentlemen. Jeremy Vaney, and I am the host of The Experience, which you're listening to, although not for long. Well, this episode is pretty long. It's extra long. But unbeknownst to my guest, Velvet, this is the second to last episode, so she will be my final guest, which apparently she didn't even plan on being a guest at all, so as you'll hear. So I want to thank her. Because she didn't know this was coming, and neither did I until really last night. I just sort of realized I think I'm done here. And it's no one thing. It's a whole bunch of things, and they keep eating at me. So I'm done. Plus, I think you probably recognize my heart hasn't been in it for a while. So I tried. What are you going to do? But I do want to thank, of course, and I'll thank him again next week, Whitley Strieber, for giving me slash us this forum to do this. And for those of you who think I've ever been censored or censored myself, I do want to make it clear that Whitley has never done that. The most he's ever said about that is, in the very beginning, he told me it wasn't a comedy show, so don't do a whole lot of comedy. Because apparently... apparently he remembers my early work. So that's that. So thank you, Whitley, for keeping a free and open forum here for us all. And with any bit of luck, I'll be back in some other form at some point, if only to do like Zoom chats or something. I don't know. We'll see what the future holds, but the future definitely holds. And I think I talk about it a little bit in this episode, the Living Mystery Symposium, which we did once here with Whitley, here being Hawaii. So it was a live event in Hawaii the last time we did it a few years ago with Whitley Strieber, Dennis McKenna, Jeff Kripal. Originally, I tried to get Teokusin Ghost Horse, and he was scheduled to do it and then had to bail. And I wanted to get a Hawaiian perspective and a Pele practitioner. And so I sort of introduced myself to Lahua Lopez, but she didn't know me then. So she didn't want to do it because she didn't want to do anything with someone she didn't know, which is respectable. But, oh, she came to know me after that conference because she went to it and was like, why didn't you tell me this is what it was going to be? So this year's lineup is like the band is back together plus the originals. This would be like if the Beatles got together with Pete Best plus somebody on Triangle. I don't know. So it is all of the above will be the speakers, and it will be online. It will either be in May or September. I'm hoping May. I'm hoping Memorial Day weekend. We'll see. Depending on everyone's schedules. The theme will be something along the lines of reconsidering consciousness, because our entire conversation about consciousness comes from the Greeks. And as Teokusin Ghost Horse likes to joke, those Greek philosophers didn't much get along with each other back then anyway. So why are we listening to them? So I'm with these players involved. I'm going to, in my beady little mind, try to structure very loosely a story that they will tell through their orations. And like I said, this will all be online and it will be completely free. So I'll be mentioning my history with doing things for the cheap or the free during this episode. It's up to you to make this history not bear out anymore. Please, it's free. Come join us. All right. So that's the good news for some of you. The bad news is this show will be over. For others, that will be just fine, which I guess, you know, that includes me. So I'm on your side. And this one time, what else do I need to say here? Well, I guess I will address, your feedback in the next episode, which will be the final one. It'll be a solo. I'll address your feedback, some of your feedback, and also try to leave you with some useful stuff as far as like ufology goes on the high strangeness side, not on the politics, whatever this is that we're talking about here side. So, all right. This may not be the conversation you want, but it's the conversation we all need to have, I believe. Get ready. Get set. Subscribers, let's go talk to Velvet. Non-subscribers, after these messages.
Ever wonder what the Close Encounter experience is all about? Think you know what it's about? When you open Whitley and Ann Strieber's Immortal Communion Letters, you're going to experience a whole new vision. Not something being told to us by researchers and theorists, but the actual testimony of people who came face to face with this unknown. Unforgettable. And the book is only $3.99 at Strieber.com.
Aloha, Jeremy Vaney here, and I want to tell you about my latest undertaking, OurUndoing.com. OurUndoing.com is a multimedia website where if you watch, if you read, if you listen, without trying to absorb knowledge like we do with normal learning, and without the normal judgmental filters that we use to compare and contrast so-called spiritual knowledge, if we watch, if we read, if we listen, without all of that, we may just wake up to our full human nature. That is what this website is for. It's not about what we're doing, it's about who we are, truly are, when we're off the pendulum of duality. If your life is about seeking truth above all else, look no further. Join me at OurUndoing.com.
In 2015, Whitley Strieber entered a whole new level of contact, and his new book, A New World, tells the powerful and revealing story of what's been happening. Read about contact experiences unlike you have ever heard described before. Learn about the breakthroughs in communication that are developing right now. Experience the wonder of seeing into a mirror universe. The thrill of discovering the close encounter experience in an entirely new way. And learn the secret of how Whitley has built a very real and ongoing relationship with our otherworldly visitors. One Amazon reviewer says, a significant document of human empowerment. Another, one mind-bending, reality-shifting read. Another, outstanding. Get A New World today, available as a paperback, a hardcover, and an ebook wherever books are sold, and as an audiobook read by Whitley on audible.com.
Without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome back to the program, Velvet. Velvet, thank you for coming on the show.
You're welcome. It's great to be talking to you again.
Yeah, you too. Of course, I had you mixed up with someone else, but I'm glad it's you. such is my memory. Such is my vetting process. Which I guess may factor into what we're going to talk about here. You had contacted me wanting to talk about what exactly? The fear factor of what's going on with society, really, but taking the form of QAnon, taking the form of Trumpism and all of that. So this is going to be sort of a free form episode, and I'm glad you're here doing this with me. What is it that you wanted to say?
Well, you know what, again, I don't remember exactly when you said this, whether it was in the first conversation we had or if you just said it on a podcast and you were talking about UFO experiencers and how they, the visitors, I think you call them, always incited fear or terror in people. And your question was, well, why? Why would that be a part of the gig?
Yeah. So what's your thought on that?
Remember that?
What is your thought on that?
Well, I mean, just because of the work that I do with reflexology and the other modalities, and I teach Kundalini yoga, a big part of the work that I do is with the nervous system. And so when we have something that incites terror in us or fear, you know, we go into that fight, flight, or freeze thing. And then if it's like super traumatic, then it almost becomes like that PTSD thing. And when we go through an awakening, a lot of times that trauma that was, whether it's from an experience, you know, from the visitors or some sort of trauma in our life, that old trauma gets triggered and we either digest it, or we just keep perpetuating the PTSD. And I was thinking about, what's the guy that you brought up? Nolan? I forget his name. The one that you couldn't Richard understand. Dolan? Yes. Why would all his venom come out now? And I just feel like there's some sort of connection between trauma from experience, Kundalini awakening, and whether or not we go when that fear is triggered, you know, do we go the fight, flight, or freeze? And do we go to that darkest part of our psyche? Or do we use it as an opportunity to heal? Does that make sense?
Yeah, although I would say he's not an experiencer, but are you sort of using that as an analogy to what's going on just in life that people are feeling this way?
Well, right, and you know, because I had my little metaphysical shop and I had a lot of people come in who have had kind of crazy experiences, and they were, I've watched whether it was with QAnon or 2012 or, you know, all of these conspiracy theories, how people get hooked into them. And it seems like there's something feeding on that fear again, or anger or racism or whatever are.
Well, yeah. Well, let me throw this at you. One thing I've learned is that, you know, the idea of Jews as bad guy, trying to take over everything has gone back at least to the Roman Empire through the protocols of Zion and up into lizard people. And so that is a thread that is old. There's also, I don't remember why we were looking this up, but my wife and I were looking up Lutherans, like what was the origin of the Lutheran church? And I think it was an Ohio Lutheran organization that gave the history that I found online. And I mean, the things that jumped out at me are that they broke away from the Roman Catholic Church to preach that the only thing that matters is belief in Jesus. Doesn't matter if you're a good person. Doesn't matter if you have love in your heart. You just believe in Jesus or else. So that's right. The main dogma, coupled with the things that they try to do to democratize the church, like, the people had more to say. They were more in charge of the ministers. They started doing sermons in the language of the people. So if you're in France, it would be in French. If it was here, it'd be English, as opposed to Latin, which is how it used to, you know, was always done in the Roman Catholic Church. And that's because that's for the educated, not for the masses. So they brought it to the masses and they sort of democratized it. And I look at these three things and I see them here now, like the sort of Republican talking point, at least since Reagan, about liberals is that they're the educated in a bubble elite. And we've always had this sort of thing where, like, it's cool to be stupid. It's the cool person drops out of school and does the drugs and all that sort of thing. Like, that's been something that's been in our society for a while. And here we see that it has its tendrils way back in, like, we don't want to be like those educated elites. And the idea of having ownership over the people in power. I mean, on the one hand, it's democratic and that's great. But on the other, I think like, oh, the insurrectionists who believe that they have the right to go to the Capitol and, you know, take a dump everywhere and kill people. Like, I look at all of this and the ties to religion that they have, and I see it. I see that whatever is going on now is tugging on these old and almost ancient strings that are embedded in certain mythologies that have been politically taken over in this country, you know, through the evangelical movement on the right and the such, that this is kind of what's happening. And it's been a perfect storm of doing that through QAnon, which is a Christian template of like the savior, you know, the great formless savior in the ether is coming to give you cue drops that are going to tell you, you know, how to be in life, like what's going on.
Right.
And coupled with the pandemic, which is keeping us home. So instead of going inward and understanding ourselves, we go online to understand what the hell's going on in the world. But of course, online has been co-opted by all this stuff. And so people are more willing to believe this, what seems like, well, what is completely irrational stuff, because it's tugging on those strings of feeling that they grew up with through their religious upbringing and through, you know, right-wing media and whatever. And I just see this as like, wow, I almost wonder if the pandemic were over and people could go back outside, would this end? Or is it now so deeply ensconced that this is the new religious movement in some way, that it's like, because I was thinking about, I'm sorry to ramble on at you here, but I'm,
that's good.
But one more thing is just thinking about Peter Kingsley's book, A Story Waiting to Pierce You. And it's a small book, but it's very well annotated, and it talks about a lot about how Buddhism spread through, is it the Mongolian Empire? I mean, they basically used warriors to spread Buddhism in, you know, in the same way that we tend to think like Christians sort of did that, you know, mm-hmm. that they had the Inquisition and all that. The Buddhists did that way back, and it's in their history books. I mean, it's in the book, but they just don't talk about it. So now when we see Buddhists who say, well, this isn't a religion, it's a way of life, you can just superimpose it over your stuff. Well, sure, now, but a few thousand years ago, maybe not so much. You had to beat it into people. And I wonder if this is how that goes for Christianity. Like, it goes out of being specifically the religion that's beaten into you through the Crusades and the whatnot, and is now just like, no, this is the way things are. You know, like, you don't trust the government, therefore anything that's not what the government says is true. And if you don't believe me, well, you're going to hell because you eat babies. That's just the way things are. You know, like, and my mom actually had this run-in. She just told me this morning where an old friend from high school, I guess, or middle school, who was conservative, but not, you know, not a loon, friended her. But one of his friends was a loon and was saying that liberals and Democrats are all going to hell. They murder babies. They are anti-democracy, you know, all the stuff, all the outrageous stuff. And she said, well, I'm a Democrat and I don't feel that way. I love this country and I feel horrible about what's going on right now in the country and blah, blah, blah. And he just came at her post after post saying, you're on my list now, you know, all of this threatening language, like angry, hostile, you're going to hell, you murder babies, how many babies have you killed, you're on my list, you know, all this stuff. And her friend defriended my mom. So, wow. Like, supported that and defriended my mom. And this is where we are, where it's not even about ideology anymore. It's just about rage. And what is triggering this rage, if anything, outside of tugging on these old mythological or pseudo mythological, they're not really mythological, strings.
Right.
If there's anything in there you'd like to respond to, I just diatribed at you, so go for it.
Well, no, I think it's odd. It feels like it's all connected, you know, because because of the work that I do, I've worked with quite a few people who have had the COVID. And what I've noticed about the COVID is that it hits wherever their weak points are. And it could be an emotional weak point, but always, you know, there's that physical weak point as well. And so when the COVID thing first started, I kept thinking, you know, it is triggering things in people. This whole situation is that are very similar to what people who I've worked with have experienced when they go through a Kundalini awakening. So there's a part of me that kind of has been able to kind of look at everything that's happening right now, seeing that, yeah, there are physically people dying and that there are a lot of people that I've known who've gotten it, who've had fairly mild symptoms, but it's always been their experiences were all very unique to what was happening in their systems.
That's fascinating. Because does this virus strike you as something Mama Earth sent to us to do this, maybe?
Well, you know, I have to admit this. I have gone down through into a few rabbit holes myself. You know, I like to investigate. I always wanted to find out the why of things. And one of the things I kind of finally had to come to terms with was COVID is we may or may not know whether it's from Earth or a lab or whatever, but it is pushing us to evolve. It's like you said, it's poking all of those old triggers, those old fight, flight, or freeze, tribalism, all of that stuff. And, you know, the opportunity is, like you said, to go inside, do your personal work. But we're so, we externalize everything so much in our culture that so many people can't handle the poke that they're being given right now.
I just also want to add, if it is from a lab, it's still from Mother Earth. You know what I mean?
Yes,
like, how perfect exactly would that be to come up through our, you know, the thing that we aggrandize, which is science,
yeah,
and weaponry, yep, frankly. We love war. And give us this. And it's also interesting because I know, like, the difference between the Johnson & Johnson vaccine that's coming out and the other two is, I think, the Johnson & Johnson one is working on the protein receptors, is only putting that into you, not the full virus, and so on and so forth. But I think the virus is mutating its protein receptors, right, in these new strains. Mm-hmm. So it's almost as if it's reacting to our vaccinations as well, and like how it outmaneuvers us. It's fascinating.
Well, and then that whole notion that I keep thinking of, have you read any of Paul Levy's stuff about the Wadico?
No.
His theory is, and I think it's not his theory, it's, I think the indigenous people had this perspective that there is this thing called, I think it's the Cree, call it the Wadico. I may even not be saying that right because I read, not speak. And the Wadico is like a mind virus. It's a virus in the collective. And Paul Levy talks about how it's like a virus. And I started reading it in the spring and have been reading a little bit, you know, with a book group. And it is very viral. And the way it infects the collective is through fear, but it gets in a lot of times into our system through trauma. And he keeps talking about how the Wadico is the virus, but it's also the remedy for the spiritual disease. And so as you were talking, it almost feels like this virus is going to keep changing. Just like Kundalini, when you go through your Kundalini awakening, life keeps poking you to wake up in whatever way it can. It's going to keep changing the situation so that you get the message, whatever your personal message is, whatever the virus is trying to tell you, whatever the Kundalini is trying to tell you. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. And not to aggrandize experiencers or anything, I'm just going to ask the question. Do you think that experiencers who find their experiences to be traumatic in the ways that we've talked about, like it's, you know, to steal from Strieber, it's as if you have a soul and you know you have a soul and these beings could eat it if they wanted to. You know, that sort of deep terror. Do you think when your fight, flight, or freeze response is dedicated to that depth of terror, that when life change, like average or even unaverage like this, an unaverage sort of upheaval of one's normal life comes along, are we better equipped to deal with that?
Potentially, if we've done our work, because, I mean, again, this is just my understanding and what I've witnessed in others. So people who are able to sort of like digest those original trauma experiences, it's almost like if we are in fight, flight, and freeze, then we're not in rest and digest, right? So we have to like deal with the nervous system response in order to calm the nervous system so we can digest the original trauma. If we digest the original trauma, then I think just from my own experience, the more my nervous system isn't in that fight or freeze, then I can just flow and navigate what's happening in my life, and I can see what's happening now through a filter that isn't obscured by my trauma from the past. Hmm. So I have more resiliency.
And are you saying that people who have, or at least some people have Kundalini awakenings, it's your experience that they have that deep terror, fight, flight, freeze instinct going off?
Yeah. And so again, this is
like,
just
what's terrifying? What's happening to them that's terrifying?
Well, so in my own Kundalini experience and what I've seen in others, there's certain things that can trigger it. Some, I think people are just, I was listening to that guy that you were talking to last week, and he started as a kid going through his, right? And I think a lot of people that I've worked with and potentially my own, there's some sort of trigger. And a lot of times it can be a trauma, or it can trigger an old trauma, or it can be like meeting somebody that blasts open your heart, right? And if your nervous system isn't strong, in Kundalini yoga, they talk about how you can get cold depression. Basically, as that fire lights up, your nervous system isn't strong enough, so your nervous system shuts down and you get what they call cold depression. But I've also seen a lot of people who get the opposite of the cold depression, and it's what I call chaotic joy. And that was my experience. I think I'm a little more fiery. So when I went through my awakening, I almost blew myself out into, like, I was super psychic, but I was not grounded at all. A little delusional, you might say, and way too much fire. And mania is another word. I wasn't complete manic, but I had that fiery energy. And so depending on their nervous system, or if they don't have a good teacher who can say, like my yoga teacher would always put me in baby pose when I would come in with that kind of chaotic joy.
And then, I mean, what's the downside to having chaotic joy?
Well, you can be a little delusional.
Like how? What's the delusion?
You're not seeing things as they truly are.
So you think what? Like, what is the delusion? What? Give us a sense of what that is.
Well, I think when I was going through it, and my energy was so big, right? I think my energy was bigger than my bubble, my aura, and I was like psychic. But I also think that's when I was most susceptible to some of these conspiracy theories.
That's interesting. Okay. So you would be susceptible to because I would think that the chaotic joy would make you feel as though everything's great in the world, and would the deception would be that other people's pain doesn't matter because they just don't get that they're not really in pain because they don't understand their own onenessiness. If you catch my vibe.
Well, there is that. There were moments of that, but like from a clinical standpoint, as I understand, mania can easily turn into anger or paranoia.
Huh. Okay.
And mine was more joy, love, light, and unicorns. That was kind of my temperament. But I bought into stuff that I don't necessarily, that I think I was a little delusional about at the time.
Is that anything that you want to tell us about? Like what would be a conspiracy theory that you would have bought into?
Well, which one?
Well, any of them. I mean, pick one. Throw a dart.
Well, okay. So kind of at the time, and it wasn't a conspiracy theory, but it was, I was really into the Mayan calendar stuff. Okay. Not so much the end of the world stuff, but more just this moving. Do you know anything about the Mayan calendar?
I will remember if you start saying it. I used to know.
Okay. Well, John Carl Coleman, he was a biologist, and he studied the Mayan calendar, one of the Mayan calendars. And he talked about how there were cycles of contraction and expansion, and that he predicted, according to his timeline, that I think October 28th, 2011 would be the end of that calendar. Okay. And I, according to, if you look back to see how those calendar shifts occurred in the past, they were always the big shifts from one age to another. There was like extinctions, there was earth changes, there was all of that. And I think I kind of, what's the word? I catastrophized a little bit. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so, but then towards the end of it, when I could feel, I mean, I got so in tune with it that I could feel the shift from what he considered the day to the night. I could feel it. And I started to understand that the earth changes, you know, the volcanoes, the earthquakes, all of that stuff was something that could happen internally and rock us. And it wasn't necessarily going to happen in the external world. And the guy that I was working with at the time, he kind of went even more extreme than I did. And he ended up stopping paying his bills because he thought the world was going to end.
Huh. Well, do you think that you latched onto catastrophic conspiracies because, or just the ways the world work, as a way to balance out, like unconsciously balance out your mania to bring you back
it
down?
It very well could be because it, and also I think since I was a child, I remember going to church at this one church and they were talking all about the rapture. And I remember thinking, of course, that I was one of the people who was going to get left behind. You know, I even had this vision of everybody being gone, except for their shoes, and there I was like the only one left. You know, they took everybody but me. So I think I've had this fascination with prophecy and end time kind of prophecy since I was a kid.
Wow. Well, so, and then you latch onto something like that, and you're in a state where you probably think, like, because it's different and joyous, it's better, right? Like, we start putting it in those hierarchical better than, worse than, like, now maybe you're onto something. Maybe you've got the knowledge that other people can't see because you're this, you know, sort of special person. And I wonder, do synchronicities start lining up for you that indicate that what you're onto is true?
Well, there are those synchronicities that kind of affirm some of the stuff I know, and yet it, on the same at the same time that's happening, you know, I start working with this. I start doing these sweats with this guy who is telling me that it's really important that I be a hollow bone. That I
is that
be
sweat
humble.
Lodge sweats.
Yeah.
Okay.
That I be a hollow bone, that I just be of service to the people, that it's not about having an identity. You know, it's not about the identity cult thing. So I may have access to some information, you might say, but I don't really, again, this thing about that, you brought it up, this external authority. I don't want to be an external authority for anybody.
Right. Right. But we also, even saying that, like, it sounds like a lot of the Kundalini problems are from treating it like an external thing, even though it's an internal thing, but as treating it as an other. It's something that's happening to me. It's something maybe I can learn how to control. It's something I have to learn at least how to be around if it's going to be active. And, you know, this might be not the healthiest perspective to have with Kundalini, and that maybe it is more a first person I am that experience where none of this confusion comes in and none of the, you know, sort of egoic whatever, you know, egoic in the sense of control. Like I am what's important here. I am special.
all right.
Yeah, that old routine.
Yeah.
So how do we, I mean, if you agree with that, how do we get people to see the significance of having to switch to a first person identity that isn't even a second person desire in disguise, right? Like, is authentically I am that, and not mm-hmm. I'm going to remain me, and I'm going to attach that to myself, and I am going to be bigger, and I'm going to talk about giving my love to the world, and you know, all of that, right. My I language.
Right.
Is there a way to even do that, or have we been at this for thousands of years and nobody's figured it out, so there must not be a magic combination to that lock?
Well, you know, I don't have an answer to that, but what kind of is triggered? You know, so I use Kundalini Yoga as kind of my reference, not all the dogma around it that seems important to me. But there's a mantra that they say is we are one, Ekankar. And I keep seeing as you're talking at this like a diamond, okay? And that each one of us are like a face on that diamond, but we're still all a part of the diamond. And so as Kundalini or awakening or the virus or whatever it is, we each have our own unique way of responding to it. And like you said earlier, if you're totally in that I am, you know, we're all one thing, we're not going to judge another person's experience, right? Or how they respond.
Yeah. Well, maybe let's talk about rage if you feel up to it.
Okay.
What now? Rage is what? Sadness turned inward or sadness turned outward? What is rage? Why are people walking around in a rage who are, in fact, the white privileged people?
Well, you know, a while ago, I wrote this story about rage. And one of the things I think about rage, and again, I don't know if there's any truth in this, but when I always think of rage as like this, so it's the liver energy, it's chi, it's life force, it's anger, and it rises when there has been some sort of devastating loss. And it's sort of, I sort of think of rage as the energy that the guy uses to lift a car off of somebody who's been run over by a car. Okay, it's like to rebuild. It's a rebuilding energy, but again, our culture doesn't teach us about rage. And if you were talking before about this historic, what do you call it, karmas that are being poked right now, mm-hmm. generational karma, whatever you want to call it, threads, what if this is just being poked and anger rises when our boundaries have been violated or we feel disempowered? A lot of the white privileged people, the people who are enraged, I think they're just so afraid of change.
It almost, I wonder, I mean, this would be 1,000 or 1,000,000 times less of what this feels like, but it seems related. Like, I can almost understand, maybe possibly, without being offensive, how it must have felt for the people who lived on Turtle Island, you know, what we know as America, as the Europeans came over and were just lunatics trying to murder them, enslave them, indoctrinate them into their culture, whatever it is, you know, all of the above, who saw them as less than human. I mean, this is the vibe that I'm getting, is that anyone who's not part of this insane conspiracy theory or insane Trump world thing is less than human, and that this is colonization rearing its ugly head as well. I mean, is that what the, I guess the thing that's like odd is like with the conservatives in this country, it used to be, let's go back to the good old days, the 1950s, you know, when there were different bathrooms for different colors and we didn't talk about homosexuality and women knew their place, you know, the good old days. And now it's like, burn the witch, kill these people, hang them, string them up, and then we'll keep the rest as cattle if we get the chance. Like, it really does feel like a switch flipped and it became this overnight. And I guess that's the part that's confounding, is beyond the irrationality of it all, is the speed with which this has changed. Does it seem that way to you, or is that just in my head?
No, I think it does. And, you know, I kind of am an amateur astrologist. And some of the astrologers over the last year have said, we are repeating these karmic patterns from the Black Plague, from the witch hunts, from the Civil War, from the Revolutionary War. And so it totally feels like that. And even like personally, you know, I had this little rock shop downtown, and I don't remember exactly. I think maybe I heard something about the, it felt like the witch hunts again, right? And I thought I should shut my shop down in the middle of the night and move out of there before they came after me. It was that, it was like such a visceral kind of fear that I was able to work through it, but I felt it.
Has anyone approached you or come into your shop and threatened you in any way?
Well, when I was on the city council here for a while, and some judge lied and I called him out, and next thing you know, somebody slipped a note under my door accusing me of being a witch. And what did they say? That I lured young girls out into the woods at night to do midnight sabbats to worship the devil. And then they went to the chief of police here and tried to get me arrested.
Wow.
So, but that was like in 2007. So I'd kind of worked, I thought I'd work through that witch hunt thing, but it feels like there is this like karmic cycle thing. And I kind of, again, got triggered when all of those, when I realized that 7 out of the 9 Supreme Court justices were Catholic, I had kind of triggered some of that Inquisition energy that I thought, oh, shoot, I am really going to get burned again or strung up or something. But it was like momentary. I knew what it was, and so I didn't react to it.
That's insane. I'm sorry you went through that.
Well, it's all, I mean, because of the work that I do, I didn't react to it, and I was able to, again, digest that old fear.
We'll be back after this.
Support UnknownCountry.com and its great mission to make contact happen. Use our vast archive of interviews, meditations, commentaries, news, and Whitley Strieber audiobooks to expand your mind and your understanding of close encounter. Meet others who have similar interests on our active free message board or in our subscriber comments and Wednesday night chats. There is no other site like Unknown Country in or out of this world. Go to unknowncountry.com and subscribe today. War Day is one of Whitley Strieber's most powerful books. Join him and his co-author Jim Konietka as they travel across the United States devastated by limited nuclear war. This acclaimed novel was originally published in the 1980s, but now that North Korea has said that they can hit the U.S. with nukes, it's more timely than ever. Don't miss this informative, exciting, and convincing testament to the power of the human spirit in challenging times like our own. Get the ebook for $3.99. Go to Strieber.com for this and all of Whitley's great books.
Aloha, Jeremy Vaney here, and I want to tell you about my latest undertaking, OurUndoing.com. OurUndoing.com is a multimedia website where if you watch, if you read, if you listen, without trying to absorb knowledge like we do with normal learning, and without the normal judgmental filters that we use to compare and contrast so-called spiritual knowledge, if we watch, if we read, if we listen, without all of that, we may just wake up to our full human nature. That is what this website is for. It's not about what we're doing, it's about who we are, truly are, when we're off the pendulum of duality. If your life is about seeking truth above all else, look no further. Join me at OurUndoing.com.
Welcome back.
So, do you see a way of this working itself out? I mean, you know, there is the push for unity, at least in politics. Come together, try to talk, and all of that. But how do you talk to somebody who thinks you eat babies and wants to kill you?
Well, you know, I think one of the things I wrote down that kind of was jumping out to me about everything that's happening right now is this doublespeak, you could call it, or lying out of both sides of your face, or talking out of both sides of your face, this cognitive dissonance thing. You know? sorry, my beagle's barking. The fact that they're saying unity after they want unity after they tried an insurrection, right? I mean, it, to me, that creates cognitive dissonance in us.
Yeah. So, I mean, but what is the answer? I mean, Biden's whole thing is he wants unity, and now he's seeing that that's not going to happen. So thankfully he's willing to change with the times. But I mean, eventually, I mean, unless we just crumble and society goes away, the dodo bird, which is probably in the cards either way, winter is coming, folks. I mean, you know, let's not take our eye off the environmental ball here. But barring that, is there a way that we come together? Because how do you show them that they've been duped if they're willing to be duped by the worst con ever, like the most obvious? Like, there's no way to even say it without sounding insulting, and then that's the end of the conversation. But you can't coddle people, because, like you said, there's cognitive dissonance there if you just pretend like, well, we can just go on. But we have to go on, right? Like, so how does this work itself out in, or do you, I don't know, do you even see it working itself out in any normal peace negotiation way? I don't know, psychological way? Or do we have to, like, turn to astrology and be like, okay, well, we'll just wait for this conjunction and then we'll all focus on it, you know?
Well, so kind of what I keep thinking about is that, okay, so if we're in this time where these patterns are repeating themselves and we can keep repeating them, right? Or we can shift and do something different, because that's kind of how you stop. And I keep thinking about the victim bully kind of archetype, that kind of energy, that a lot of this energy is like bullying energy. And have you been bullied?
Oh, yeah.
And so I have been bullied, and I know how I personally stopped the bullying, you know, and how I, my own play with that victim bully energy. And so I think when there's a bully, which I think on some level, that's what, whether it's the Romans or the colonizers, it's all this bullying energy. The opportunity is not to be bullied anymore. And the potential of, you know, I don't want to put my, you know, Joe Biden is just an aspect of me kind of thing, you know, he's showing me something. The potential of Joe Biden is to stand up to the bullies, to like be honest and be clear and clean about, we're not going to tolerate it. Right. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I'm listening.
So I don't know what is going to happen. I think that a lot of people who pretend to be prophets are just, they're just like following patterns. And I don't know that we shift the pattern, then things will change. But I think there's a lot of work we need to do in this country.
Well, for you, how did you come off your delusions or even your mania? Was it just the baby pose or?
I think baby posed. I had a really grounded Kundalini yoga teacher, and she would, she would put me in baby pose, and I could feel that fire ground. I could still be happy, but I wasn't so chaotic. I became a yoga teacher and kind of learned that technology. I think for me, being in my body was one of the biggest keys to getting rid of that mania, dealing with what had been provoked by life or the yoga or other people, dealing with it, digesting it. And then I think also having the right people come into my life, that whether it's through the sweat lodges or, you know, it's the outdoors for me too, being outside.
So if we don't have a society that supports this at large, that doesn't have a way to help us if you want to say evolve or transform or whatever it is, to be the full expression of human being, then are we a doomed society from the word go? And is this all a natural, if terrible, outcome?
I don't know. I kind of was thinking about that Carl Coleman guy. He talked as a biologist. He said, humans don't evolve unless they're pushed.
Evolve. So, but see, I guess I would say like the spiritual transformation is not, the push has to be you. It has to be you constantly aware of yourself. I mean, essentially bringing your own unconscious personal baggage to light, I guess, first to consciousness, and then, and also, the collective, whatever else is in there. But so a constant self-awareness that is so strong that you're in the moment, and that in itself is meditation. But we don't have a society that says to do that. But that would not be something someone else pushing you to do that. You would just have to know to do that somehow or care to, right? Like it's a complete change of how you are in the world to then change, into the fullness of what a human being is. If we ain't there, does the system collapse and the people, go back to the woods or what? are we living in the awful repercussions of our failed system, essentially, our failed culture?
We might be. And yet, because I'm sort of an optimist, you can be too optimistic and not be realistic. But I guess my optimism is that I see, even because I'm pretty much just doing reflexology right now, teaching Kundalini a little online, but I see people even now who just start working with me with the reflexology, and a lot of them are like kind of what my husband calls Joe Normals, and I see little shifts in them. People are awakening through these times. Some people they're a lot harder nuts to crack, though. But
what is the awakening, do you think? Like, what do you think? Like, because when you say awakening, I think to myself, well, there are billions of people in the world. Is there enough time in the day? And then I think, well, the kind of people you're talking about are so-called first world people and probably people with some money. So is it just those people that get to awaken? What about people in poverty? What about people in other countries with completely different backgrounds? Like, is awakening universal and is it available to everybody? Maybe that's the question.
Well, I really want it to be available to everybody. I think I do my work sometimes for what people can afford. So I give discounts, and so I have a pretty broad range of clients. And
that's not a knock on you, by the way. I wasn't trying to specify you. Yeah,
it's something that I've struggled with because everything has been commodified. My teacher, who my sweat lodge guy, there's no exchange of money in that tradition. And so there are traditions where they're available, but people have to like make the first move, like they have to show up at the sweat lodge or they have to come, they have to ask me for help. I can't go and barge in and tell people that they need to wake up.
Right. It's just there's the other weird thing, at least in this country, I don't know about other countries, but where unless something is expensive, people don't cherish it. People, I've tried to do conferences for cheap so that the most people can afford to go and the least people will show up. Or the more I charge for a book, the more people buy the book. And you talk to people individually and they swear they don't do that, but that's what we do. And there's something about that that's like, we've so been brainwashed to believe, you know, the monetary value equals whatever, even when it involves people we know we would pay big money to see and should be thrilled to see for free. It's like, well, I don't know. Yet and still, so I mean, like when I set up my Hour in Doing website, I put what I thought was a pretty steep price on it, so that, well, to keep out, you know, trolls and stuff like that, but also knowing that dynamic of people, that unfortunate dynamic. But now I'm finding myself wanting to make it free, and my wife Carol and I are putting on another living mystery symposium that'll be online. And we've essentially all the speakers have waived their honorariums so that we can make this for free too. And you know, I guess that's something. But at the same time, I have no delusions that even if people have free access, they're going to do anything other than try to incorporate what they learn as knowledge that they can apply to themselves instead of getting over themselves, instead of shattering the self and finding that
right
butterfly from the cocoon. They're just going to add on to the cocoon.
Right.
But so I guess what I'm saying is, like, I'm at the point now where I have no illusions about that I'm going to help people or that my words are going to matter at all. It's simply, I have no purpose that way, I don't think, anymore. It's simply that this is the way I speak now, so that's how I'm going to speak. And maybe because I'm vain and arrogant, I'm going to put it online. And if you want to listen to that, great. If not, great. But is that the way we have to be? Like, I guess it's circling back to that question of there is no magic formula, is there, that gets us over ourselves? There just isn't.
No. No, and I'm there. I feel like, your podcast about questioning everything really struck me, because that's what this whole year has been about, is letting go of what I thought I knew, any beliefs that I have. And so, like, right now, I reached out to you. I didn't know we were going to record it. I just kind of wanted to talk to you because you always make me think about things in a different way. And I really think it's about each one of us. As honestly as we can, like, doing whatever today we need to do. And then tomorrow, do I still need to do it that way? And just like that, not getting stuck or rigid in how we're supposed to walk through these times.
Yeah.
You know, show up in the most authentic way we can. You know, I struggle personally. Like, I have spent a lot of time by myself over the last 10 months, and I really like it. And yet my ego, is it my ego or my soul? I'm not able to differentiate right now. Do I need to be doing more to support people, or do I just wait for them to call me and work on their feet? And so right now I just, when people call me to work on their feet, I work on their feet. That's what I'm doing.
Is there a website or any sort of way people can contact you if they want this for themselves?
I kind of don't really even have a website right now. I have an email.
Is that something you want to give out?
Sure. I'll give out. Yeah. VELVET. 59937 at gmail.com.
Okay. And they can get in contact with you for, well, what's the limit for what they can contact you for? Reflexology, Kundalini, yoga.
Yeah. I'm doing some Kundalini online. That's available. I also enter with my reflexology, also work with the Akashic Records. So I can do Akashic record work over the phone. Sorry.
Your dog agrees.
I can do that over the phone. I also do some modalities called body talk, and I do some blueprint work kind of well, I do blueprint work over the phone. So I have some tools that I can do over the phone. But I just, you know, if people are called, I'm open to it, but they have to do their own work.
Right.
That's kind of what's changed too.
So do you want people to learn how to be able to do these things for themselves? Is that what you mean by they have to do the work?
Well, and that's, I think, with any kind of awakening, right? I mean, from my own experience, you know, I could go to all the astrologers and tarot readers and all that stuff, and they could tell me all kinds of stuff, but it was like me getting on my mat and doing yoga every day or getting outside every day, you know, looking at my own book every day. I could do that stuff until I was 100 years old and still not know any more about myself if I was always looking outside myself. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, actually, let me ask you one more thing on a related note, but swerve this around because it's something that's been on my mind lately, which is the idea that supposedly enlightened people can, you can be like a spiritual 10, but a psychological 2. And so you can have people who abuse mentally or sexually or whatever it is, their clientele or their cult, but still completely understand the spirit stuff and have even had legitimate spiritual experiences, but it doesn't affect their psychology to the degree that it should, I guess. So at what point then can we not go to another person? Like, if that's true, then what about enlightenment is enlightening? If I come out of enlightenment and I'm still an a-hole or a criminal or abusive, then how can that be promoted to other people as something they should want? Like, how are you even different? Oh, you feel good, but you don't make other people feel good. There's something about that that just doesn't sit right with me, where it's like, well, why are we listening to anyone in the first place? Like, Whitley, when he had, I don't know if you were following this thread about Brooks Agnew.
I listened to that. Yeah.
Okay, so he had this guy, and it turns out he's a pretty dangerous person, in my opinion. I mean, at the very least, he is an insurrectionist sympathizer. That's at the very least. And so do you have on a guy who, it turns out, is a pretty terrible person, even just because he's not speaking about that stuff?
Because to my mind, well, you wouldn't have Mengele on. I'm sure Mengele knew a lot about the occult. But once you found out he was Mengele, you would probably be like, keep your occult wisdom to yourself, Mengele. But okay. So my question about that is, like, one of the things Whitley had said in the comments section is D.T. Suzuki, who brought Zen to the West from Japan, was a Japanese nationalist. And it turns out, I looked into his background a little bit, and it turns out he was also a Nazi or a Hitler supporter. But I don't think we found this out until 2005 or 2008 when somebody presented the evidence. But nevertheless, the question is, what do you do? Like, what do you do about somebody who's that hugely famous and all of that? And when I look at what he said about that stuff, D.T. Suzuki was saying, well, it's terrible what's happening to the Jews. On the other hand, for the German people to feel good about themselves, to feel happy in life, maybe they need to project onto other people. Maybe they need to have a scapegoat because that makes them feel good. So I can understand why Hitler would do that. And I look at these, and that's almost a verbatim quote. It's not, but it's almost. And I look at that and I think, yeah, that does change not only what I think about him, it changes what I think about Zen. Like, if Zen Buddhism, if this mode of enlightenment is to bring you to a place where it's okay to subjugate and murder and burn other people for your people to feel okay, that's not enlightening. That's a problem. I look at this and I go, okay, how much can we actually look to any other person or any other mode, any other cultural mode even, of being so-called enlightened at all? Doesn't it all have to be from us, and yet we're the thing that we can't get over? Right? Like, the irony is, it's got to be from within you, but not you, because you are the person who's the problem. And I just throw my hands up. Like, why is anyone speaking about any of this at all? It's like, God, time to go back in my shell or something. I don't know. I'm sorry, that's a lot to throw on you.
Well, and I think after I listened to you and I was going through my own stuff, I almost felt like this existential crisis or this nihilistic crisis that it's all BS and that, you know, none of it really matters. But I also, you know, that whole thing about it's almost more the questions that you raise than the answers that you give that are so important.
I think that's true.
You know, we may not have the answers, but the questions are really important. And so I had a friend who used to say, well, you know, people can learn to bend the light and they can bend the darkness. So basically, you can manipulate light and you can manipulate darkness. And they're both on some level, it's black magic. It's a misuse of energy. And as a student, you might say, I think my lesson has been not to put anybody on a pedestal. And when I go to somebody now, it's because I have a blind spot, something I can't see, some like shadow or something I can't see in myself. And I go to people that I, you know, I trust who are going to call bullshit on me. Excuse me. I know I shouldn't swear. I apologize. But that's the only time I go see anybody now is when I can't see my blind spot.
Well, that's good advice. Maybe that is the perfect note to end it on, unless there's anything we didn't get to that you wanted to talk about. Because I know I blabbered on, so thank you for letting me vent, I guess. I didn't realize that was what it was going to be. But
do we have a time limit?
I guess not.
Well, I guess the only thing, I kind of made some notes about, you know, you brought up this authority outside of ourselves, and we see it with all these spiritual teachers, and we see it with Trump, and the, you know, everybody's given their authority away. And I don't know if you know, I've kind of studied black magic, not to do it, but to be aware of it. And somewhere I read with black magic, because we live in a free will universe, supposedly, people can't do things to us unless they tell us they're going to do it.
People can't do things to us unless they tell us they're going to. Is that true?
I don't know. I don't believe anything anymore. I'm just asking. I mean, and you know how, again, I probably even shouldn't name the person, but the guy who was the president previously, he has told us all along what he was going to do.
Yes.
And when he tells us and we don't, I mean, are we giving consent, or is it, again, this is just where the whole black magic thing comes in. We are, you know, how many people are manipulated by his words? He made at his rallies give oaths, loyalty oaths.
Right. There is this weird thing of, on the one hand, he seems like the most incompetent person on the planet. On the other hand, that incompetence seems to have covered over nicely the stuff you're talking about in terms of, you know, if not black magic, certainly hypnotic techniques coupled with pushing people's buttons in these, like we're talking about, long-term pseudo-mythological ways. And also actual policies that hurt the country and that hurt the earth that are complicated policies. So somebody knows what they're doing, whether it's him or not. I don't know. But yeah, I get what you're saying. There is some eerie quality of a veil of magic. It's a spell that has fallen over a good part of the nation, and some of it you can see what some of it is, I guess, is the point, but I'm not sure that those techniques and all add up to the totality of it. I guess that's my question. Maybe that's your question too. I mean, because I think saying witch hunt over and over again, tweeting it in all caps about what they're doing to him, which is false, but just doing that over and over and over again, his people pick up on the dialogue, and then they pick up the torches and pitchforks and start doing a witch hunt. against people in the Capitol building. Yeah. That's not a coincidence, yeah. But I don't know that that's the totality of, I don't know that anything explains the totality of it.
Well, I mean, I just have, I have some personal experience. You know, I live in kind of a conservative place, a little bubble, liberal bubble, conservative area. And I work on, like I said, a variety of different people. And this summer, I would go to these people's houses because I didn't have an office anymore. And when I would go in, they were either playing Fox News, like it was just in the background, or there was a Christian radio program that was going on, and or they were constantly on the internet on these, I don't know, Breitbart or some of these like kind of like to me way out there news programs. And it's like there's a programming that's happened, literally programming.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm going to talk to a hypnotist about this on Hour and Doing Radio. It's like going to be the second episode in, I think. So by the time this airs, it'll be Hour and Doing Radio. The next season begins airing on Wednesday. So tomorrow from when this comes up on Tuesday.
Okay.
And then the following Wednesday will be that episode. We do get into that a little bit. Not as much as I would like, but it's interesting what his opinions on that are. But I've seen more of, in these like, QAnon movies, they all have like flashing images. They all have all of these things where, you know, to my mind, it's like, I wonder if they're doing subliminal messaging, if they're hiding something. Now, this hypnotist seems to believe that, and he's a very smart guy. In fact, I've had him on this show before, James Hazelrig. That it's not as much subliminal as overt. It's all out there. But I think even if that's true, they might not know that subliminal messages don't work as well as the overt stuff and be doing them anyway. I guess that would be right. My point is like how many people know what James Hazelrig knows? I mean, really, what we've been told is that subliminal messages work. I would think that they're doing some of that stuff and that it does work to some degree. But I don't know. I mean,
well, which feels like it's coming back around to the whole nervous system thing again.
Okay. Yeah.
So when you're in fight, flight, or freeze, you're not in rest and digest. So I work with the meridians and there's all the, you know, there's a bunch of the meridians that are tied to digestion and the, where they go in the body are, how are we digesting what we see? How are we digesting what we hear? And I really think this kind of egging people into fight or flight or freeze keeps them from like using discernment, which is tied to like the gallbladder meridian and the small intestine meridian. People aren't able to digest the reality of what's happening and what they're taking into their, what they're feeding themselves with.
Oh, boy. So we don't even know what we're doing to ourselves. I mean, well, I just want to add one more thing to this, which is, and I might have talked about this on the show way back when or not. I can't remember. But when I was in college, I was a manager. I was a building manager at an event center. And the Catholic priest in the school brought in these speakers from Operation Rescue, Reverend Flip. How could you forget that name? Who eventually went on to get arrested and put in jail because they ended up being an anti-abortion sort of terror group. But at this point, they hadn't been arrested yet. And they were there and it was a big to-do, you know, because it's college. So naturally, people are going to be up in arms and taking sides and all this. But I was the building manager, so I managed the building that day. And so I got to watch their presentation and all of that. Before I watched their presentation, they had this film. So their film was like, you know, aborted fetuses and all this gross scare tactic stuff. But on the same videotape, because it was the VHS days, when they were rewinding and trying to cue up that, they had on that also video of little girls getting into witchcraft. Which was not part of this program. So I don't know what program that was about, but I thought that was odd. And then I remember like the crowd was from the community of from Connecticut, Hartford, was a lot of older white people, not people from the college, and they were all very Stepford Wife-ish, the men and the women. The wide eyes, the, hey, who are you, brother? Hey, you know, that sort of welcoming thing, not welcoming. You know, the, and it reminded me of either the movie Inception or my own dreams, where you wake up into the dream and the dream characters become hostile. Like they, you know, you're awake and then they start chasing you down. It reminded me of that, of like they can, they're sniffing you out. And if you're not one of them, I mean, this is the 90s. So if you're not one of them, then I guess you're shunned or they're going to try to convert you to something. But now it feels like, again, that has changed too. If you're not one of us, we've got the gallows out back waiting for you. So right. I think that that whatever that is was so in the air. And I've never felt that before that. I haven't felt that since. The feeling of the humanity being in that groupthink or whatever that, I don't even know what that is, but I've, so I've felt that before and it feels cult like what you hear cults being like, it feels like all that awful stuff. And, you know, when we're talking about the former president and company, to be up on a stage before the insurrection and to feel the wave of that particular brand of negative, hateful, hidden, not so hidden in his case anymore, energy, and to thrive on that, for him and his people to get up there and embrace that and not be repulsed by that, is its own magic, isn't it? I mean, what do you attribute that in the human being, that you can take something so anti-life as that energy and thrive on that, and you know, you're going to try to produce it because it, I get that, like you want to produce it, you can manipulate it, you can go be president off it. But doesn't it do something to you personally internally? Or are you so, I mean, is the word evil? Is the word psychopathic? What is the word for it to have a defense mechanism against that, even to the point where you embrace it?
Well, you know, what kind of comes to mind again is that Wedeco book. He talks about how there's the big Wedecos, the Wedecos that have the power, and how they, they infect people. And the Wedecos, according to that Paul Levy, the Wedeco is always going to push us to our worst until, you know, if you have some sort of, whether it's that your awareness of your own cognitive dissonance, that becomes so uncomfortable that you wake up, or you just go like fully possessed. Kind of the other thing, again, I know we may be running out of time, and if you want to not talk about this now, that's fine. But I went down a rabbit hole, and again, because I don't know, because my discernment isn't 100%, I'm just finding it curious. This woman was talking about how there were these gamers, and I don't know anything about games, but there's these gamers that were first targeted by this whole QAnon thing. And that the thing that stood out, the thing that made them susceptible, is they were outsiders. They didn't really fit in. And then that it is a type of psychological, a psyop. And that that Cambridge Analytica has gone in and been able to go on all of these Facebook chats, and they've feed this data that they find, and they fed it right back to Trump so he would say what those people were thinking, what they were expressing in those groups.
That would not surprise me at all. Is that a fact or is that a supposition? Like, is there evidence of this?
Well, I maybe I'll email you that QAnon from a gamer's perspective, and this guy who develops these games, how he thought that QAnon, the way QAnon was set up, was like a game. And then, so I'm kind of a thread person, like I will get these bits of information. And then, so there was that. And then this other woman was talking about how Cambridge Analytica was getting all this data in all of these groups, that were kind of outsiders, and feeding that to the president. And then in the valley here, there's some big money that's come in here. And one of the guys is a general, retired. I think he's like a guest on Fox sometimes, but he is a PSYOPs specialist, and he has some really strong connections to that QAnon. So I think there's, again, because I have been gone down rabbit holes that were a little delusional, I'm really trying to be, what's the word, discerning. So I, you know, I don't want to spread false information, but there's some of that makes sense to me.
Well, it makes sense to me too. I mean, really, the only thing that keeps me from full on in believing it's a PSYOP is that I don't think this becomes what it becomes without the pandemic. And I think the pandemic is natural, or if it's not natural, it's not related in any overt, you know, way like
well,
that.
Well, this one woman was talking about, you know, if they've had these plans to like do whatever, the pandemic wasn't planned, but they used it as an opportunity.
Well, see, and this is 9/11 all over again. Unless you believe that 9/11 was an inside job, which I still maintain is a possibility, at least you know that the project for the New American Century was kicking around, where they, you know, all the muckety mucks got together and said, if America's going to be a powerhouse in the next century, this is what we need to do. And the only way to do it is if we had, I don't know, some sort of war or something that the American people could go along with. And then lo and behold, this attack happens. And yeah, the outcome is much of the stuff they wanted to do in the project for the New American Century. So even if they couldn't imagine this happening, even, you know, it sure came at a nice convenient time. And it seems like, wow, isn't it weird when, like, let's say it is fate, you know, or whatever, like not, you know what I mean? Like, let's say it's not contrived. God, we always want fate and stuff to be about the good. And sometimes it just isn't. Sometimes it's about really awful things. Like, any way you walk away from these situations, I know you're the optimist, but anyway, walk away from these situations, there's always that shadow, you know, it's calling attention to the shadow side that we like to pretend isn't there because there's only a greater good plan going on. But to my mind, at least. But I did want to throw this in, which I'd asked you if you'd heard of Project Serpo before we started recording, and you said no. So for those of you who don't, Project Serpo was an online, through a message board, someone was claiming that the government had a secret space program that had gone to this planet Serpo and met the, whatever, Serpians, I don't know what. But that we were already out there in space, you know, doing cosmic NAFTA and all of that. And this went on for a good long time, for years. I don't know how it ended, but, it, you know, thousands of people got involved in this, what seems to me to be a primer for QAnon. So if you're going to go the way of there's a PSYOP here, I think that probably if it's true, whoever it is, you know, beta tested everything in ufology. Did this Project Serpo, and there's, you know, I can't talk about it more than to say that I know of at least one muckety-muck in ufology who is someone who's also a muckety-muck outside of ufology who was promoting Serpo at the time, who should have known better, which means he probably knew better. You know what I mean? So he's trying to get people to talk about it and to make it a big thing in ufology by saying, well, you got to look at this. You got to talk about this on your show to certain people. And he would have known better. So that to me does smack of this is a PSYOP. And I don't know where it went. I don't know how it died off, if people just got bored and walked away or what happened. But something like that, which is not based in any reality other than testing maybe how long you can string people along with garbage and how garbagey you can make it before people catch on. I wonder if that's what it is. And since I'm on a tangent here, this entire episode, let me just say, I'm going to even throw that out there for whatever the hell it is Jacques Vallée thinks he's doing by introducing these metals that he alleges he's studying, that he's been studying for a long time, that are from UFOs. I think that's garbage. Jacques Vallée is one of my few heroes in this field. And I think he's probably doing something psyop-y with this. A hero no more, let's say. Although I appreciate his earlier work. This later work smacks of hot garbage. You don't go to a UFO conference and say, look at what I'm working on. Can't tell you anything about it, but here's a description. Right. And he knows better because he is a scientist and a muckety muck. So I don't trust anybody anymore. I guess I'm going the paranoid conspiracy route of like, it's just rotten head to toe at this point for me. And really the only place left to go is silence.
Right. Right. Well, and then again, this is sort of piggybacking on what you were talking about. I just saw a clip with Anderson Cooper with some guy who is a QAnon guy. And I don't know if this is Project Serpo or something related. He talked about the blue avians.
That sounds familiar, but what is that?
So Corey Good, David Wilcox, that whole blue avian thing.
I never really followed them. I'm sure I've heard of it peripherally, but could you explain what that is?
Well, I mean, I didn't follow it either. I just would hear like people talk about it. But so the guy who was talking to Anderson Cooper said, I apologize that I thought you ate babies or whatever, and that I believed in the blue avian, something like to that effect. And according as how I understand the whole guy with Corey Good is that he said he was like an doing military stuff on Mars, and then he met these blue avian chicken dudes, and that's all part of the QAnon thing. So it feels like there is some connection between the whole UFO thing and the people that believe some of that stuff and the QAnon thing, like you said.
Huh. Great. The plot thickens.
You know, this is the other thing that I don't know if the word is struggling or trying to digest, is that that people can take something that has truth in it and then that's sort of, and then distort it, you know? So it's sort of, again, when you're listening to somebody and there's just a smidgen of truth, potentially depending on your, I don't know, gullibility, you might just pick up on that little tiny thread of truth and discount all the flashing warning lights about all the garbage that they've connected to it. And so I think what this time is potentially, at least for me and what I'm kind of hearing from you, is letting go of all of it, you know, the belief in any of it, and going back to that basics, you know, whether it's chop wood, carry water, do your practice, be kind, put your money where your mouth is.
Yeah, keep your head down and do the work. And
yeah, exactly.
I guess, can I just leave on this note that work has to involve Mother Earth, has to, you know, even though this has been an anti-other person episode, technically, has to involve other people, has to involve community, has to involve helping, because so much of what I see in the spirit stuff, and even with the aliens, you know, where it veers into spiritual territory and people feel like they're getting downloads and they're getting, you know, it's always self-serving. There's never anything about other people. You know what I mean? It's always about finding a community of like-minded people so you can feel safe and doing your work for you. And I guess maybe it's under the theory that you've got to help yourself before you can help other people. But I would just put out there that you never quite seem to get there. Because there is no end to the process of health, which takes the form of self-help. So we need to start helping each other. We need to incorporate, not just talk about, not just give lip service to Earth, to animals, to others. We need to get back to being human again, I guess.
That's probably ultimately what it is.
Well, Velvet, thank you again for doing this and for putting up with my cathartic moment.
No, it was great. I mean, it was helpful. I mean, that's the thing. When I reached out to you, I didn't know if we were going to record. I just wanted to bounce some stuff. I mean, there's something about this is community, right? We get in our own little bubble of thinking about stuff, but then when we talk to somebody, then we our view, our understanding expands.
Yeah, and also thank you for reminding us all of what we've talked about in the show and what Whitley has talked about, which is remain with the question, that whatever the answers are, who knows? But the state of questioning is the state of silence. It's important to remain in question. It's important to formulate good questions and allow the answers to inform you rather than you going out and finding them. Yeah. I think that's always the best way to get authentic answers. Anyway, throwing that out there.
Well, thank you, Jeremy. It has been great.
And that'll almost wrap it up for this, the second to final episode of The Experience Ever. My thanks to Velvet for sending us off with what I think is a much needed discussion. Yes, even in this field where we don't want to deal with politics of the day. Although I guess like conspiracy theories of yesteryear are politics, right? So we're okay with that. Anyway, I guess just on a couple of final notes, Jacques Vallée. I've been thinking about it, and I'm thinking, what if Jacques Vallée isn't doing a PSYOP so much as is part of some CIA project to ferret out either spies in the government or just people who leak secret information to other governments, just to see where the information trail leads. I mean, it could be something like that. We've seen things like this in ufology before, right? On a different level. I mean, Donald Trump himself did give secrets to the Russians just in meeting them, right? Like, admittedly. And then the administration had to defend itself by saying, well, he's allowed to do whatever he wants. He's the president. Well, maybe they want to see, like, what the level of that would be. Like, how, what kind of information wouldn't this man give? Or the people under him? Maybe it was something like that, and that's why he is supposedly working on metals from UFOs, which, last I knew, I didn't think he really believed they represented solid objects, at least from other planets. Anyway, there's that. That's my ray of hope, I guess. That's all I've got. Dwindling rays of hope for me. The other thing is D.T. Suzuki, and thinking about it, and in reading more up on him. I mean, he was the representative of Zen to the West, but that doesn't mean that he's got the final say on Zen. So I guess I shouldn't be too paranoid about just how awful Zen itself is. In fact, if anyone would like to come on Our Undoing Radio one of these fine seasons, who is a Zen practitioner or maybe even a monk, I don't know, and set me straight on the history of Zen and how it isn't just about, well, I guess if it makes you happy to murder people, then you should do it. I understand that, because it can't really be that, right? Like that's just got to be this one guy's attitude, and he's a product of his times. And frankly, the more I read into what I'm actually reading, the more I see that it's possible he didn't mean it that way. Like, apparently he was riffing off of something I think relatives or friends told him who were living in Germany about what was going on there. I mean, I don't know. I find it hard to believe that he would be pro-Hitler in any way. But I also don't want to sit here and make excuses for any of that. So I'm canceling him until further notice. I know it's late. It's late in the game to cancel D.T. Suzuki, but I am. Cancel culture rears its head again. All right, everybody. Next week, I will say goodbye and hopefully leave you with nuggets of wisdom you can do something with as pertains to ufology, not the politics that I've been talking about, but the actual subjects therein. Take care.